This episode of What the Tech is brought to you by Away. Away makes first-class luggage at coach prices that allows you to charge your phone on the go. For $20 off your order, go to awaytravel.com/Andrew and use the promo code Andrew. That's awaytravel.com/Andrew. Molecule. For $75 off your first order, visit molecule.com and enter the promo code Andrew. That's MOLEKULE.com and the promo code Andrew. Harry's. Stop messing around and get started shaving with Harry's today by claiming your free trial offer. $13 value for free, just covered the shipping by going to harrys.com/whatthetech. Everybody, welcome to What the Tech. I'm Andrew Zarin. Of course, I'm joined by Mr. Paul Theroux. How you doing, Paul?
Pretty good.
So we have a lot to talk about today.
Alrighty. What will that be, Andrew?
Boy, I seem to have upset a lot of people. More than you do, usually.
I'm pretty good at it.
You are pretty good at upsetting people, but I like to give a fair assessment of what I'm experiencing at the moment.
I already found your problem. You can't do that.
You cannot do that. You cannot be honest.
People have different experiences, Andrew, and the people who don't have the bad experiences you have don't just disagree with you, but they are insulted by your experiences.
Apparently a lot of people were. I mean, they really were affected. The emails that I got from people, I was stunned. A lot of people were very deeply affected by some of the comments that I made about what I think of Android in 2018 compared to iOS in 2018, which I want to go into a little bit. I have a bunch of other stuff I want to touch on here also, but I also built this little guy.
Yeah, I know. It's awesome.
Yeah, I built this little guy here. So I want to.
What's funny about that is it's like three times as big as it needs to be.
Dude, I know. Actually,
it's a bunch of empty space.
Yeah,
there.
Actually, this whole thing, if I covered my hand here, this is how big it probably should be.
Yeah.
You know, like this.
That's great.
You know what's amazing? When I ordered this on Amazon, I ordered the case separate. It looks a lot bigger, the case.
I was like,
this will be cool. Like, I'll put this little thing in this giant case. No, it's a tiny little case. I think I paid a total of $60 for two controllers, the case, and the Raspberry Pi with the heat sinks, and I got a fan also that I have not hooked up yet. So I want to talk about that and a couple other things also. But Paul, how was your week?
My week?
Yeah, since I last saw you.
I can't think back that far. It was pretty good. I don't even know what happened last week. I got food poisoning on Friday night. That was fun. So it's kind of out of commission on Saturday, but my wife and I went to our local wineries here in Pennsylvania. That's been a very pleasant discovery that those things aren't just pretty good. They're in fact, excellent. I didn't know that before I moved here. And of course, Apple had their big event. So
yeah,
whatever that was.
Yeah. Which we'll talk about that.
Yep.
I do want to talk about a lot of things. You brought up that you were sick, and I'm getting ready for allergy season. I don't know, Dad, we've discussed this a couple times. You know, I get the worst allergies every single year, and it tends to get worse for me. So it was so bad that I do this thing called an in-body test where, like, it measures my body fat and all that stuff. But there's also, like, a blood test that comes along with it that tells you dietarily what you're allergic to. You know, like, everybody's gluten, you know, everybody has a gluten allergy or a gluten intolerance. But if you most of the time, if you take that test, you're going to find out that most of these people do not have those issues unless, you know, you seriously have an issue with it. So I actually thought I was gluten intolerant, and then I found out that I have almost no food allergies, but I am my environmental allergies are through the roof. I'm allergic to everything you could imagine. So living for me for, like, the next 3 months is going to be very difficult.
You're just generally intolerant.
I'm generally intolerant to everything around me. Right. And I want to welcome our new sponsor, and that's Molecule. And this is the great thing about these guys. They have replaced the 50-year-old antiquated technology that's used for filtration. The HEPA filter is used by almost everybody, you know, from air conditioners to heating units to air purifiers. But the problem is the technology was developed in the 1940s, and there's been no major innovation since then. Now, molecule, it uses something called photoelectrochemical oxidation that goes well beyond what HEPA filters can do and capture. It eliminates up to 1,000 times smaller of whatever's in the air, being mold, bacteria, viruses, any airborne chemicals. It includes pollutants up to 1,000 times smaller than what a HEPA filter can do. I'm actually getting one of these. I started doing some research on this, and for whatever reason, this is the craziest thing. My living room, if I sit there or my father sits there, our eyes are on fire. Whatever is in the air has sat in that area, and I'm going to order this thing and put it there. They have a great, great offer for you guys. $75 off your first purchase when you go to molecule.com. That's M-O-L-E-Q-U-L-E.com. And you enter the promo code Andrew when you check out. That's molecule.com, promo code Andrew at checkout. This seems really, really cool in the way that this is developed. Also, it was funded by the EPA for testing with real people. So this is not a, you know, fly-by-night air purifier that you've seen in the past. This is they've done their homework, and it actually looks awesome too to be in there. It's a very slick design. If I can pull it up here, oh, I gotta sign in. There we go. So look at that thing. It's like a little Alexa right over there. You know, that'll be great if they incorporate Alexa in this thing. Molecule.com for $75 off your first order. Visit molecule.com and enter the promo code Andrew. That's MOLEQULE.com. Let's start off with revisiting my, actually, you know what? Never mind. Let's start off by Apple. I want to talk about Apple and their introduction of the new $299 iPad geared towards education.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
It's not a new iPad. It's essentially the previous generation iPad, correct?
I think so. I think it's identical. Is the processor upgraded? I didn't catch. It was an A10
something. It's the A10 Fusion chip.
Is that what they? I don't even know what the newest one is. I don't care about this stuff.
I believe that is the latest. I believe there's nothing different from the most recent generation iPad.
Yeah. So a year ago, Apple released a new 9.7 inch iPad, low price, $329, and it sold like gangbusters. In fact, it reversed their several year sales slide there on the iPads.
Isn't that amazing? Drop prices and people will buy it.
What a theory. Yeah. So for this year, they were rumored to be lowering the price again, and there were rumors about them adding Apple Pen support, Pencil support, which, you know, makes plenty of sense. So they did add Apple Pencil support, but they actually didn't lower the price. So I guess they released a bunch of education-related software and services, none of which anyone should care about. Mm-hmm. And that was it. That was the whole event. I found it somewhat ironic that Apple had to travel outside the state of California to find a school district that was actually using their software. But they did. And you know, they're number three in education now. They used to be number one. Lab was a long time ago, by the way, but they used to be number one. And now Chromebook is as big as Apple and Microsoft combined.
Yeah, because you could actually use a keyboard, right? It comes with a keyboard.
Yeah, and that was the other thing. You know, obviously there are third-party keyboards, and they talked about a Logitech keyboard, but it's odd to me that they didn't come out with their type cover, whatever they call it, the smart keyboard or whatever.
I have to tell you, it's not a bad keyboard at all.
No, it's fine. Yeah. You know, my only issue with it is that it only affords one angle for the screen. You know, it'd be kind of nice if you could adjust that. And on mine, for some reason, it's kind of hard to describe, but if it's sitting flat on the table, the keyboard kind of sits up a little bit, like it kind of comes up towards you.
On the end, yeah. You know what? Did you notice that started happening later on, or was it like that always for you?
I don't think it was like that in the beginning, but it's been like that for a while.
Yeah, because I'm looking at it, and it's kind of warped. It's kind of coming up now.
Yeah. The weight of your hands on it, I guess, will help push it down. I don't know. But, it's kind of a design flaw, I think.
Yeah. This is interesting. You know, it's going to be $299 if you're a school. I wonder if that means that if you have a .edu email address.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's how.
Yeah, if you're a teacher or you're, you know, administration or you're a student and you have a .edu, that's how they're going to do it. Or maybe you could show that, you know, my kid goes to whatever school. They're also offering 200 gigs of free iCloud storage. And there's going to be better software management for the schools to manage, you know, what's going on these devices.
Yeah, I mean, that piece is very much like what Microsoft did a year ago and is very much what, like, Chrome has been doing for a while. And that's the point, you know. The benefit of Chrome OS to schools isn't just the low cost.
Yeah.
It's the super easy management that doesn't require an IT staff or a separate consultant or whatever. It's something that teachers can actually handle themselves. Yes. So Apple is smart to respond to that, but they're missing a big opportunity here by not offering a computer to this market. Their lowest cost computer, barring sales, is a $999 MacBook Air, which is out of date, or a $999 MacBook whatever, which is woefully inadequate and too fragile for an education scenario.
All right, so this is interesting, right? Because there were rumors about a couple of weeks ago, and I think we discussed it on the show, that Apple's looking to reintroduce a lower-priced MacBook to their lineup, right? Whether it's a MacBook or MacBook Air, whatever they call it. And this has been something that's been rumored for a while, and they've prided themselves out from being, you know, as a premium company, but if they are reintroducing the iPad to education and they want to kind of take a chunk of this market, because the reality is the kids now is what's going to be Apple's future, right? They are, once you're in an environment, once you're used to using something, you tend to stick with it.
Well, yeah, I mean, Apple, they have a good position overall with phones, obviously. Yeah, this market kind of speaks more to work, you know, in a way, right? The future of work. It's a real danger for them. I mean, you know, by virtue of the iPhone halo effect, they were able to get more Macs into the enterprise than was ever the case before. But if they lose people at this stage, you know, that kind of thing disappears and never becomes a major market for them. So I think education is key for all the big platform makers. They all have to kind of show up here.
Yeah. You know, it's not a bad idea, yeah, but you're right. I mean, once they introduce a laptop to this, it's a real discussion then.
Yeah, they need an eMac portable. Something that is
I think that should
rugged.
Be the name.
Yeah, whatever. I mean, you know, but you know what I mean? Like an education-focused computer that is portable and can be put in a rack and can be wiped out or have multi-user, whatever, cloud-based user accounts, however it's defined, where people can walk into a classroom, pick the computer out of the rack, turn it on, sign into their account, and get to work immediately. Right? It can't be a thing where it takes 25 minutes or whatever to blow it away and, you know, put their user account on there. It has to be fast. And I have to be working on this. I mean, their solution for school cannot just be iPad. It's,
well, I mean, here's
really
the other
basic
thing.
Solution.
Apple has not done a great job at creating profiles for their iOS platform to use, other than you do, you know, through their management tool, which a lot of people recommend. The last time I brought this up, but I'm not talking about, you know, myself or Paul again, or you, the IT admin. I'm talking about, you know, a mom that wants to hand their daughter their phone and wants to put it in kids mode so they don't click on everything and ruin their phone. They really have not done a good job at that. Same with the iPad. So maybe this is a step forward where they're getting a little bit more kids friendly.
I agree.
You know, I know that you could obviously lock certain things and you could, your app store could be locked,
they really don't have anything.
It's really, they really don't have much in that sense. I did want to bring this up because it's interesting that they're looking at a lower price thing. I mean, my wife's a teacher. I would maybe be more likely to go buy a new iPad now. Right?
Yeah.
Not saying, I mean, I have an iPad Pro, but if I was in the market, I would say, you know what? $299, not bad. It's not a bad deal at all. Saving a couple bucks off of it. So, have you used the pen? What do you think of the pen?
It's actually really good. The Apple Pencil.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. It's funny. I was just looking for it, so I don't even know where mine is, but, which is the problem with these devices. You know, they came right out of the gate with something that was super high quality and rivaled the capabilities of like the Surface Pen, which to date had been kind of the best smart pen in the market. As of last summer, when I evaluated that Pencil versus the new Surface Pen, which in tandem with the new Surface Pro offers the best performance that Microsoft has, these things to me are almost identical from a like performance slash lack of lag slash capabilities with regards to tilt and pressure support and so forth. They're both excellent. I don't, you know, personally have a need for that kind of thing, but for people that do, it's actually a really good choice.
Yeah, it's not bad at all. I use it at work all the time for during meetings, because we have a giant iPad in my conference room, and I'll jot down notes. You know, I'll just grab it, but we have like 2-3 of them with the pens, and it's actually really handy because I just write the notes and then just sync it to my computer. It's phenomenal. So I wanted to touch on that really quick. There's not too much more to talk about because I know the next couple topics are going to be a very heated discussion here.
Slightly more controversial.
Yeah,
I really don't know what happened to my Apple Pencil. I'm a little nervous about it.
Maybe the cat took it.
That's more. Oh, wait. Is that it? I found it.
Oh, there you go. What's in Paul's draw? Maybe we can make that into a bit on the show.
Yep. Okay, Kat, I need you to go. Come on.
So we took a little break. We had some technical issues, but I want to dive right into this because this is going to get a little bit this is going to be an interesting discussion, and it speaks to the volume of how we think as a society now, okay? I've always been open about how I use technology. And Paul, I mean, you and I talk about this all the time, and listen, you're a journalist. You're a legit journalist. I play one sometimes, you know, when it comes to this stuff.
Sure.
But you and I have always discussed technology. Would you ever say I'm biased?
No, not in the way that people often mean bias too. I mean, we're all the product of our own experiences, you know? But no, not in the sense that you go into something saying, I hope this thing fails and I'm going to color my experience by hoping that it fails. You know,
do you think I'm an idiot when it comes to technology?
No. Okay. In fact, I hope I've said this before. I mean, you're incredibly well-rounded. And the fact that you're a younger guy is slightly irritating to me. But you're not an idiot.
So I want to explain to people where mm-hmm. my thought process comes from.
Where my bias unbelievable comes
from. Yeah, my bias.
Hatred of all things non-Apple or whatever. Yeah. No, please continue. I'm sorry.
I want to dive into this because I want people. My boss said something to me, and the guy that I work for, he's one of the most brilliant marketers I've ever met. I mean, the guy is well rounded. He's a smart guy. He's not a he's just really the way that he thinks. It's astonishing to me all the time. I always thought I was good at my job, and then I talked to him, and you know, he just knows his stuff. And he said something to me a couple of months ago, and it really made me think. And this speaks volumes. He goes, you, not me, but in general, you need to take yourself out and take out the interest that you have when you're talking about something that's catering to a general audience. Your bias and your personal interest, you know, if it's creative, yeah, it plays a part. But if you are trying to explain something to the masses, when you incorporate your bias, it takes away from the masses. Now you're only catering to a smaller group. So it was an exercise we were doing on how to promote without incorporating our interests. And essentially the conversation was, we need to explore other venues that makes us a little bit more uncomfortable so we learn more. Like, let's say with wine, right? We want to promote something towards a wine clientele. You know, we have to mm-hmm. learn about wine. We can't just know Pinot Grigio and whatever else wine that we like. We need to explore because there's different varieties and different, you know, different flavors and everything. So
sure.
This plays a big part. When I talk about Android, the difficulties of Android compared to iOS or vice versa, it's not hard for me, guys. I'm not having an issue adapting iOS or Android. Yeah, it's a little there are pains in the butt scenarios. There are things that I prefer on one platform compared to the other. But when I'm saying this is a difficult task or this is a problem, I'm speaking about...
You're not looking for help from people to explain it, how it works.
Well, you know what? Sometimes that's great. Sometimes, you know, sometimes I'll throw a question and I'll get it. But I'm not talking about me. Yeah. I'm talking about... And I'm not talking about you or a lot of the people in our audience. I'm talking about the majority. You know, I got a ton of feedback. I mean, a lot of angry feedback from Android users saying,
That makes sense. Those
you're
are,
looking,
an angry
you're looking,
group of
you're
people.
Looking, it, very angry group of people. yeah.
Yes.
And I saved a couple of these, right? And I'm not going to go down the whole list, but some of them were. And the reason why I'm concentrating on this is because it's almost like an exercise for us, right? We should kind of think about what other people are using. I got a lot of Andrew is not an expert. He just uses technology like everybody else, like our moms does. Well, one person goes, Andrew uses technology like my mom. Of course, my mom is going to find Android difficult. Well, that's a problem, right? If you're Android, Google's not coming in. Samsung's not coming in saying like, hey, you're an enthusiast. This is for you. You're an expert.
Yeah, it's
this
not
is
designed
for
power users. If it can't work for normal
people. And the other one was Andrew's not a power user. I would disagree with that. I think I am a power user. And I use things specifically on certain platforms because of the way that I use my phone or social media or whatever. I consider myself a power user for certain things. This phone and this phone is catering to the same exact person. They are not catering towards power users. They're not catering towards IT specials. They are catering to whoever walks into the store and whoever picks it out. Apple and Samsung are fighting for the same people. There is no such thing as, you know, Android is catering towards power users. No, that is they tend to use it more because of customization and tinkering, but they are catering towards the same exact person. That's like saying my Raspberry Pi and the NES Classic that were released are catering towards the same, you know, they're not catering towards, it's the total opposite side of the argument. This is catering towards an enthusiast, and that's catering towards the everyday user. But these devices are catering towards the same people. So when I describe the difficulties that I'm having with Android, I'm not talking about me. I'm talking about, in general, you know, me being frustrated that the fingerprint sensor doesn't work on the first shot. I could understand it, but the person next to me that really does not give a crap about technology just wants it to work.
Yeah.
You know, as I said that, the other day, you know, it almost was funny. I don't know what happened. I had music playing. There were no apps running. Oh, I shut down all the apps, but the music did not stop playing. You know, that's a one-off occurrence, but it also speaks about the ongoing issue here. I absolutely love Android. I love the fact that I could customize it. I love the fact that you are not in this box. You could do a lot of you could even change the ROMs if you want, depending on the phone. I mean, you could tinker all you want. And to the point that I put this thing in developer mode every time I get an Android phone, and I turn off the animation because I don't like it.
Right.
So I use it like you guys, but I don't know how tolerant other people will be of, you know, the Bixby stuff and all the other stuff that we don't like. It's easy for you to write, you know, hey, Andrew, you could turn it off. Yeah, but most people don't know that.
Right.
And they're never going to turn off Bixby.
No, I review products and I hear this kind of feedback all the time. You know, people feel a need to explain to me things that they understand very well because they're used to it. And the assumption there is that I don't understand it. And it's the same thing that you're saying. You know, I explain like it's, you know, iPad Pro multitasking is really difficult to use. And they're like, I don't understand what the problem is. I use it every single day. And I'm like, exactly. That's why you don't understand what the problem is.
Yeah.
It's not discoverable. It's not anything like multitasking on other systems. It's very difficult to invoke and use. And it doesn't work consistently or at all with certain kinds of apps. You know, and so you can kind of defend any assertion that you make. But as far as, you know, iPhone versus Android goes, all I can do is nod my head because you're right. You know, iPhone is always going to give you a better experience, period. But if you really care, and people do, about things like being able to put an icon exactly where you want it on a home screen.
Yeah.
You know, or I don't want the icons to be rounded rectangles. I want them to be circles or, you know, whatever. Android's going to offer you more choice there, but there's a price to pay for that choice. And that price is multifaceted actually, but it involves such things as reliability and performance and, you know, all kinds of things. And so, you know, you make your choice. I think Android, and I would say Samsung in particular, I think that these products are so complicated to the normal person that they become overwhelmed very quickly, and it helps to re-cement in their minds the notion that technology is hard and that they're just not smart enough and that they're just going to hope everything works and stop thinking about it, you know? And so I don't think they think about Bixby or turning it off or about, you know, the assistant they don't have that they should have or all these issues that consume enthusiasts like us. But I also feel like they're overwhelmed. And every once in a while, you can just come out with a little bit of bland how-to type stuff that will change people's lives. Yeah. We talked about the bold text thing that you can do in the accessibility settings of iOS. I know several people, and I mean several, for whom that was life-changing.
Yeah.
Because they couldn't see their phone.
Yeah.
You know, and now
my father. My father's one of those, you know?
Yeah. It's a big deal. And you know, to a power user, it's like, what are you talking about? That's, you know, that doesn't mean anything. That's stupid. Yeah.
Well, listen, what I'm saying is, here's what I'm saying. This is my everyday phone now. You know, I'm using this every day. And unless you're in both environments equally at the same time, it's a very hard thing for anybody to assess what's better and what's not. I'm using these both these phones. And you know, I was honest about it. I said for 1 year, I was almost exclusively iOS. And now it's a little learning curve. Now I'm almost at week two with this, and it's gotten a little easier. But with that said, there are a lot of quirky things that I don't like. You know, there are applications out there. Like, I'll give an example. When you use, and I'm not 100% with this phone. I gotta check this. But I was reading about why. Have you ever taken? Here's a good question for you, Paul. Have you ever, like, with Snapchat or with Instagram? Have you ever used their within the client to take a photo? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Oh yeah, right.
Rarely, yeah. I use it rarely. But with Snapchat, for example, you have to because that's the only way to take the photos. Depending on what Android phone you have, the quality of the picture will be drastically different because of the way that the API is. Some of them use Android itself. Other ones are using their own stuff. With iOS, you don't have that issue because it's using the same exact thing because it's easier program. I don't know if it's like this on this one, but somebody did a review a couple months ago, and I was looking at it, and it was, you know, the cameras were equally as good, but the quality was drastically different depending on the applications that they were using, because it is hard for a developer to write one type of, you know, they have to, how many phones do they have to cater to, you know?
Right.
Yeah. So
I just ran into that. I just reviewed a phone, and cameras are a big deal for me. Just talking about the camera app itself, three different phones, three different camera apps. Not even the in-app camera app. I mean, just standalone camera apps. It's crazy.
So since we're on the topic of the camera, I used it all weekend and it's very good. I don't know if it's better than the iPhone X. I still don't have, I haven't done a fair comparison with that, but between the iPhone 7 and this, and you really wouldn't notice, because the iPhone 7 is a great camera. You know, it's fine. It's night and day, especially under low light circumstances. My God, it's night and day.
Right.
So with the camera stuff, it's cool. The front facing camera, I did some more work with it. It's freaking awesome. Mm-hmm. The way that it blurs the background. I posted a picture of it. Me at, I was at press. I don't know if you saw that. It's on my Twitter. Well, either way, I was at press and I took like a selfie and it blurred out the back. It kind of looks like portrait. Yeah. I mean, that's exactly what it is, but it did a great job. Okay. And making the photo pop. So with that said, listen, yeah, I get it. More power users tend to like this, but if you just want it to work and you don't want to deal with a lot of the stuff that I personally deal with, you're better off using iOS. Here's one weird issue on this. I can't get, you know, the cards like for Google Now, like this thing?
Yeah.
Okay. I can't get this to work on this phone.
I don't like that.
Does it not work anymore?
You'll have to switch launchers.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Well, that sucks.
Yep.
When did that happen?
When did it happen?
Yeah, when did this start happening? Because it always worked.
I don't know, but the last two versions at least.
Yeah. And I actually like the Google one, you know? So, I don't know. I'm going to play around with launchers this week, so I'll go into that, but you know,
this is a beautiful example of why Android is tough. Use a Google Pixel 2 XL. Obviously, you're getting the full Google experience in this device. There's a Samsung, which has many changes, some of which are good and some of which are not so good. OnePlus 5T, which I reviewed back probably at the end of the year, and then the Huawei Mate 10 Pro, which I just reviewed, and I'll be sending back soon. And you could build a little matrix of how the features align on each of these things. I mentioned the actually, in this case, four different camera apps, for example, which is the case. That thing you're talking about, the ability to access what used to be called Google Now off the home screen, is available on two of these devices, but not on two of the others.
Yeah.
The ability, you know, like that kind of thing. Like, it's a little maddening. If it was a pure choice, which I think is the point of Android, it would be okay. But the truth is, you can't just enable that feature on these phones. It's not there. So if you want to use the Google Assistant or the Google, whatever they call it, that thing off the side of the home screen, you got to switch launchers. Now, yeah, you're making a choice, but what if I want the other stuff, but I just want that screen, you know? This, we're just talking about two things here, and it's already a mess, and that's Android. And some people revel in it like a pig in mud or something, but to a lot of people, that's just like, it's like, whoa, what are you talking about? Like, it's just too much stuff.
Yeah, and most people aren't going to notice. Again, that's another thing, you know? Are most people going to be like, well, it's a launcher. Obviously, I got to switch launchers to get this thing to work, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, right. First, I have to even understand what that means.
Yeah. I want to talk about the other phones that you reviewed. You reviewed a Huawei phone.
Yep.
I want to get your input on that. But before we continue, I want to thank our sponsor, and that's Away. Away Travel. So this is awesome, actually. For a long time, I was traveling all the time. And this became my go-to bag. It's a nice little carry-on luggage. It's a beautiful suitcase, and it has a USB, it has a charger in it. It has like a little battery, like one of these bricks inside, and I would just plug it in there. I use this thing whenever I got to do like a photo shoot or something. I plug all my stuff in there and I charge everything. It's actually awesome the way that it works. You could check out awaytravel.com, so you could check out what their brand is and everything. But they got a great offer. Awaytravel.com/Andrew. You could use the promo code Andrew to get $20 off your order. Now, you could pick the carry-on color. You could put in your shipping info, and it shows up at your door. It's amazing, this bag, this carry-on. It's a nice little suitcase. I think you've seen it, Paul. I think one that I met up with you, and it was really nice. You know, it's phenomenal. You cut out the middleman. This is a great thing. You don't have to go to a store. You cut out the middleman. Away is able to offer the perfect luggage made with high-quality materials at a very low price. It comes in 10 different colors and 5 different sizes, everything from carry-on to a bigger carry-on to a kid's carry-on to a medium bag to a large bag. The carry-on bag features 2 USB ports and high-capacity battery, allowing you to charge multiple devices on the go, whether it's a laptop or a tablet or a phone. You don't have to worry about your phone dying at the airport or on the flight, because shockingly, a lot of flights still don't have outlets. It's made with premium impact-resistant German polycarbonate. It's awesome, this thing. And it's step-proof, TSA-approved combination lock built in. Go to awaytravel.com/Andrew and use the promo code Andrew to get $20 off your order. Plus, you get free shipping anywhere in the lower 48 states, which is great. Also, a risk-free 100-day trial period. Order it. Check it out. See if you like it. Travel with it. And then you can send it back if it's not for you. These guys are great. I absolutely love them. Paul, I want to get you one of these. I want to get one of these sent to you. You might actually like
okay.
this. Okay. Yeah. Awaytravel.com/Andrew.
I accept.
I accept. Did you see the P20 flagship from Huawei?
Yep.
The notch has invaded Android.
Yeah, well,
why?
Shocker.
Why? Why are you putting a notch when you don't have to put a notch?
Android or Google is adding support for notches to the OS.
Yes.
And that's all well and good, but that release of the operating system is not happening until the fall. So releasing one now means that there's an opportunity for status messages to get under there. And I don't get it. So I wonder, maybe
Huawei has a launcher that
true too. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Maybe.
Maybe they're modifying it a little with their launcher.
Yeah, that could be. Yep. They do. They certainly do custom work on the UX for sure. They have their own launcher.
So there's the P20 and the P20 Pro, which includes the notch, and it's a 6.1-inch phone. It's a big phone. It's
also a triple camera, I think, on the
triple
Pro.
Triple camera. So how does that work?
There are three cameras.
Three cameras. So what would it be? Two, it's combined, and then the third one is like a really zoomed-in shot?
I'm actually not sure what the configuration is, but yeah, there are two that are combined and then one
The telephoto lens allows 3x and 5x hybrid zoom. I don't know what hybrid zoom would be accounted for.
Well, okay, so on the Huawei Mate 10 Pro, they have 2x hybrid zoom. It's what it really means is not opticals. Actually, no, that's not what they call it. I'm sorry, they call it lossless zoom. It's not optical. So I suspect hybrid zoom is a combination of optical and non-optical, and for optical, it's probably 2x. That's just my guess. Yeah, it's something yeah, like
so
that.
So it says the lens uses optical stabilization, like you said, but the other two lenses include a including the primary 40 megapixel rely on AIS or artificial image stabilization to stabilize all your videos. The camera system on the device also now features, which uses lasers, blah, blah, blah. I want to, not a lot of information. Big battery, 4,000 milliamp battery, 6 gigs. Nobody in the U.S. is buying this thing, right?
I mean, well, enthusiasts might want to get it. You know, it's not going to be available at retail. It's not going to be available at wireless carriers because it's Huawei. You know, they're Chinese, yeah. And we have a little bug up our butt right now about the Chinese and the Russians, actually. But, this is one of the top three or four smartphone makers in the world. I can't remember exactly where they fall. And they're doing that without selling any phones in the United States.
Isn't that amazing?
They are a big ongoing concern. I'm sure in the early days, like a lot of these Chinese companies, they started off with a serious case of Apple envy, and they do a lot of Apple copying. In fact, you can make the argument that this notch thing is another example of that. But they make flagship class phones. They use Snapdragon processors in some phones, but not in others. And the one I just reviewed has their own kind of ARM processor in it. It's just as fast as a Snapdragon.
Yeah. You did the Mate 10, right?
Yeah, the Mate 10 Pro. Yeah.
What was your overall?
It's great. It's, you know, it's just like the Samsung, just like anything. It's got pluses and minuses kind of when you compare it to like a pure Android phone. Camera's great. It's not quite as good as the Samsung or the Pixel, but it is great. The performance is great. The specs are really high end, 6 gigs of RAM, 128 gigs of storage, Snapdragon 835 class processor, and GPU and an MPU, which is like a neural processor, which helps the camera, which is one of the neat things. Remember we were talking about complexity, not just today, but I think last week as well. And this notion that, yeah, you could probably go into the Samsung app and frig around with the settings and, you know, whatever. And if I want to take a picture of food, there's like a special food mode or whatever. This thing actually does on-phone AI or machine learning to examine the scene that you're taking and then auto sense the right settings for it. So instead of forcing you to find a food mode, it can tell you're taking a picture of food. I don't know why I can't talk today. And, we'll color it accordingly or configure it accordingly. And I've noticed this with food, but I took a picture of my cat. It also is like a pet mode kind of that it does. And it basically creates like an Instagram filter kind of shot where it's like HDR, kind of really rich colors.
Yeah.
And it just kind of does that stuff automatically. And so that kind of stuff's good. There's bundleware on there, which is not necessarily positive. There's a lot of duplication of apps, which is what we see on the Samsung side of the fence as well, which is kind of weird. But, you know, Huawei's a huge company and they're kind of doing the Samsung thing. So, you know, that's part of their shtick. But, it's just tough because they just can't be found, you know, in a wireless carrier, and that's going to hold them back in this country.
Yeah, I'm curious about that. I mean, these are flagship. I mean, these are high-end devices, like you said, and we don't really see it. But the Huawei Mate 10 Pro, it's $800 bucks, and you could buy it, I think, B&H, Amazon, right?
Yeah, it should be $700 bucks now that the Samsungs are out.
$799, yeah, $799.
Yeah, no, but it should be $7, like, instead of $8, like... That would solve a lot of problems because right now, versus a Google Pixel 2 XL, which by the way, equivalent Pixel would be $940, $950,
this is a tremendous savings. And for $250, unless you absolutely need the very best, you know, that smartphone photography has to offer. Well, not anymore, I guess, but, you know, one of the best. Saving that much money makes tons of sense. Versus an $840 Samsung Galaxy S9 Plus for $40, I would go with this. I'd have to get the Samsung. There's too much awesomeness there not to choose that. But if there was a $140 difference, you know, we'd have a different conversation.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm taking a look at this. I'm curious when we're going to have... Fascinated that they're able to do something, you know, almost at the level of Samsung, but LG and HTC have kind of fallen back in the last couple of years. You know, they're shifting a little bit. The momentum is shifting.
The kind of makeup of what used to be the top smartphone companies has absolutely changed, right? I mean, there were companies like RIM and now BlackBerry and Nokia that used to be like the top, and they're basically gone. There are companies that like were mid-tier but successful companies like HTC and Motorola that, you know, were kind of a big deal for a long time and were often looked to kind of innovate in the market in ways that the market leaders wouldn't.
Yeah.
And they're gone too, actually. I mean, I realize they're still there, but they're kind of not in the picture. And I think these Chinese companies are the next, obviously, Apple and Google and Samsung and those kind of companies. But I think there's this wave of Chinese, specifically, maybe we should say Asian companies that are coming and not Western markets, but to the United States in particular. These companies are in Europe and they are in other markets.
And they're selling.
And they're probably familiar brands. Yeah, and they're selling very well. They're, like I said, there are at least two Chinese companies in the top five. They're complete unknowns here, you know, and we're in many ways artificially sheltered from that.
I think the shift will come when we start seeing a lot of these companies make way here in the States with ARM-based Windows laptops and tablets. Last year I had a slew of these, you know, unknown to us Chinese branded Dell knockoffs and HP knockoffs. Right. I mean, I was getting like whole bunch of these. Were running, you know, a couple of them were ARM-based, actually. They were doing like a dual thing where they would switch. It had two chips on it, so one was for the tablet mode and one was for the PC, which was really weird when you docked it. But a lot of them were running like lower-end Atom-based processors, but they were running, you know, on these decent-looking laptops that nobody would imagine, and it was fine. So imagine with ARM being supported on Windows, how much they could do. And they're selling these things for $128. You know, it's...
Sure.
Dirt cheap. I'm getting a call, of course. You know, my friend Josh tends to call me. He calls me every What the Tech, every single time.
We have, Brad and I are routinely messaged while we're recording First Ring Daily by the people we work with. It's an almost completely unbroken streak over a year and a half we've been doing it. Like, it's perfect.
You get a message every time.
Yeah. Almost. I'm literally almost every single episode.
Yeah, that's how it is. So you've been using that ARM-based HP laptop all week, which I want to go a little bit more into detail about it. But before we do, let's thank our sponsor, and that's Harry's. I absolutely love them. Listen, I use them to shave every single day. And, you know, over 3 million guys have switched over to Harry's, so there's a reason there. And Harry's is so confident you're going to love their blades. They'll give you the trial set for free when you sign up at harrys.com/whatthetech. All you got to do is just pay the shipping for it. It comes with the razor handle, the 5-blade cartridge, the shaving gel, harrys.com/whatthetech. You can sign up there. And the story is great. These were two ordinary guys, Jeff and Andy, that started this company. They were tired of buying overpriced razors that really didn't work too well. It's a whole process to go to the store. It's locked up. It's a whole procedure. They bought their own German factory with over 100 years of blade-making experience to ensure the highest quality, and all their products are backed with 100% guarantee. These guys are great. It's phenomenal. The weight feels great on them. I use it all the time, and this is a great set. You know, Father's Day is coming up. You want to give a gift. Somebody's birthday is coming up. They come really nice. They're in this beautiful box. I don't have one here next to me, but they come in this really nice packaging. You can give it it looks very expensive with the packaging, which it's not. And any guy in your life is absolutely going to love it. Go to harrys.com/whatthetech right now, and you get your free trial set. Just paid the shipping. That's all you got to do. Harrys.com/whatthetech. I want to thank Harry's for supporting the show. Let's see, Paul, where would you like to go now? Let's go down this beautiful trip called... there's two things we could talk about. Actually, Google's bringing Chrome OS to tablets.
Yeah.
Why?
There's not much to say here, but I think the rationale behind this is that Android tablets have been an overt failure for them. And bringing Android apps into Google Play Store platform to Chrome OS, yeah, of course they can go to tablets. And I mean, the Pixelbook is an example of something that's basically a tablet. It's a 2-in-1, but you fold the screen back, you use it as a tablet. You can use it with a pen. You can use it with your finger. It's a tablet. It's a thick tablet, but it's a tablet. And so this year, we're going to see the first true Chrome OS-based tablets, or as they call it, I guess they're called Chromebook tablets, which is kind of a terrible name. But the first is an Acer device, small screen. It's education-focused. You know, fine. But I think throughout the year, we're going to see more devices of this type. I bet Samsung gets in the game like they did last year with the Chromebook Plus and Pro. And I bet Google gets in the game as well with the Pixel branded device sometime in the fall. So,
the Acer Tab 10, it's a 9.7 inch IPS display. It's going to be running at 2048x1536. It provides 9 hours of battery life, they're saying. It's going to cost $329. So why would I buy this for $329 when I could get an iPad for $329?
Why would you buy this?
Yeah, why would I buy this?
I don't even know how to answer that question. Yeah. I mean, it's a Chromebook, so despite the fact that it doesn't come with a keyboard, you could add a keyboard into it easily, and it's much more optimized for that, and supports mice and trackpads, which is something that an iPad does not. And so from a productivity perspective, it's potentially a better solution. I mean, honestly, when it comes to like apps and that kind of thing, the iPad is no contest there, right? There's no doubt about that. The iPad as a tablet is the best tablet. But from an educational perspective, actually, you know, even given all the stuff they announced today, like, again, you know, the iPad is just a lackluster tool for education. By the way, a pure Chrome tablet, not that I've used one, but if you don't attach a keyboard to that thing, I don't think this is a particularly compelling solution either. But what? I think the point of this is that you can add a keyboard. You know, I know you can add one to an iPad, but
we've kind of looked at this and we've all bought, you know, like I had the Nexus 7. I've had a slew of Android tablets. Why did they not get traction? What was the problem here with them? I mean, Samsung made some beautiful tablets. It just...
Yeah.
Zero traction.
Even Google did. The early days, Google, you know, the first two Nexus 7 tablets were pretty fantastic.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's kind of hard to say. I don't know that there's a case study that makes sense for like a business school kind of thing, but the differences between the Android and the iOS markets are stark and very interesting to me. Tablet app development just never kind of took off on Android. So there was a lot of cases where you get a phone app that was kind of stretched to full screen. And so instead of it being something that was laid out correctly for that size screen, it was just, you know, little bits of text, you know, stretched out over a big area. You know, Apple kind of looked at this the right way and made sure they had the tools in place early on so that when this thing came out, the first iPad, they, you know, they had software that was tailored especially for it. And when you're running a phone app, it's obviously a phone app. You can zoom it up to, I don't know if it's 2X or 4X size, but it normally runs just as like a little window in the middle. It looks like a phone, you know, and so that's not a great user experience either, but it's better than stretching an app out maybe to full screen. It's hard to say exactly what the reason is, but the fact remains that for all the success that Android has had on the phone, the tablet is just never happened. You know, they tried to do it. Remember a couple of years ago with the Pixel C, which had a magnetic keyboard case, a cover case, whatever. Just never came together.
Yeah. It's interesting to me because I had a bunch of these and just, we never used them. I don't know. I mean, they'll obviously exist in the market, but I don't know what capacity. So the MVX2, you've been using it longer. So do you have any changes to your thoughts about this?
Yeah, I mean, I think I don't remember where I was. We must have talked Thursday. So, you know, I think I had already, the battery life is real. The ability to run Windows desktop applications is real for the most part. Actually, there are some exceptions. You know, it doesn't run in 64-bit apps. There are some driver installation sets that don't work because they literally are trying to install drivers. You think the software just kind of work, but it doesn't. And then the performance, though, is pretty terrible on the desktop applications in particular. Even fairly simple apps like the text editor that I used to write takes a long time to come up. Mm-hmm. And as I'm typing on the keyboard, it's kind of lagging a little bit. You kind of notice a little bit of a delay. And so I've kind of reset it, not the device itself, but rather my review process. And I'm trying to use as many store apps as possible. And the thing that's interesting about that is even the desktop apps that are in the store, like the Microsoft Office apps are a great example, run acceptably fast on this. When I'm typing in Microsoft Word, that full Microsoft Word, like the real thing, this is an x86 app too. It works fine. Like there's no lag at all. And that's interesting to me. So I think that kind of usage combined with the battery life could make this thing make some sense. There's some stuff going on with web apps on the Windows 10 platform where progressive web apps are coming in. We've seen the first big one, which is the Twitter app, which works fine. And I think that might put it over the top. So I'm going away to Colorado for the weekend. We're bringing my daughter out to look at some schools. I'm going to bring this device. It's got integrated cellular access, so I'll use some of that on the road as well. And we'll see how it goes. But it's it's like a Surface Pro. I don't know how to explain it. Like, if your goal is to use Visual Studio or play games or run Photoshop or something, either don't or you can't. depending on the app. But if you want something that's thin and light and gets crazy battery life and has no fans, and you're okay with that small selection of apps that are in the store, that is where this thing starts to make a little bit of sense.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm very curious about how long term you could possibly use this.
Yeah, I mean, it could never be my computer, right? It's not going to be like a Surface Pro. I could dock to a desktop and use it. It could be my computer because it's a Core i7, lots of RAM, lots of storage. It would work. Actually, this is decent RAM and storage. But it's the it's just the emulation stuff. And then there are the things I kind of do need that make this a little bit more untenable. The fact that it can run that stuff at all is kind of nice. And so if you could get along with, this is kind of like the Chromebook scenario. Like, I really only need to type long things sometimes. And so here's this thing, which you could sit in your bag and you never charge it because it sits there on standby forever. And when you do need to use it, you open it up, it comes on instantly, and you can type and get stuff done, and then you're done, and you leave, and you go back to your phone. I mean, I do think that's actually a pretty big market of people, to be honest, and so the potential's there.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah. Very interesting. Paul, we do this bonus show at the end of every show. It's called What the Talk, and this week I'm going to be talking about my Raspberry Pi that I built and my journey down this road of how simple this thing is to set up.
Yeah.
Any idiot like me could do, apparently. It's very easy to set up. It's the first one that I built. You've done stuff with the Raspberry Pi before, right?
Yep.
It's so easy, right?
Yeah, I mean, for the most part. The deeper you dig, I mean, there's all kinds of crazy stuff you can do with a Raspberry Pi. So it's kind of like the ultimate tinkerer's computer in some way. I mean, other than the fact that it's not super, super powerful.
Yeah.
But it kind of reminds me of computing back in the 1980s, before the IBM PC was really kind of a thing. Like, it's hobbyist computing.
Yeah, it's actually really cool how this is. You could do like these do-it-yourself kits or stuff that comes. I want to dive down this road during the bonus show. But if you guys want to watch the bonus show, if you're watching live, stay tuned. You can watch the bonus show. If not, here's an awesome thing. Go to patreon.com/whatthetech. You can fund us there as little as $1, and you get access to all these great bonus stuff that we're doing. I really want to go down this journey because I've really learned a lot and using a Raspberry Pi and setting it up and what you can do and what you can't do with this thing. It's fascinating. It was a while since I did anything like this, and I'm very excited to talk about it. You could go to patreon.com/whatthetech. Go fund us $1. That's all we want. And it keeps us doing the show. We've been doing it for a number of years. It's a nice little bonus for us. at the end of the month. For all things Paul, go to therot.com. Paul, anything coming up? Anything new?
anything new in what capacity? Yeah. What do you mean?
Anything? What have you been up to? Anything new coming up on therot.com? No?
No.
Okay.
I don't know what to say. What do you mean? No.
Maybe you're doing something new. I don't know. Maybe you got
I have an ongoing set of things I'm just doing, but there's nothing. I don't have anything to announce today. Sorry.
Yeah. It's okay. Don't worry about it. You know, it's fine. Go to therot.com for all things Paul. Go check out First Ring Daily. He does a great show with Brad every single week. And then, of course, he does a show with me here. Guys, that's it for this week. See you later.